laced with Islamophobia. Modi is allied with India's billionaire class, who control the country's major media and function as cheerleaders for a regime that gags democracy, free speech, and dissent. Our guest today is P. Sainath. He's an award-winning journalist who writes about rural India. "I cover the people," he says, "who live at the bottom end of the spectrum." He's the founding editor of PARI, the People's Archive of Rural India. He gave the Hari Sharma Memorial Lecture at the Surrey Public Library in Surrey, British Columbia, in early October. And now, P. Sainath, Gagging Democracy, India Style.
A few months ago, just before the national elections, our Prime Minister, Narendra Modi, discovered and declared that he had understood after his mother's passing that he was not biologically born. Yeah? And had in fact been installed by God to show all the rest of us whatever he has been showing us. So when we are talking about governance by gagging, and I'm going to race a bit.
United States, absolutely unhinged. But also, this is an act of terrorism, exactly like the Badger attack and any other attack. But this could not have of the United States, directly and indirectly. Joy, we need to say this clearly. The United States government is colonized by Israel. It was never about America first. The real priority is to continue to arm Israel, finance Israel, and to continue to accept whatever is doing, regardless whether it's undermining America's national security. But what they did yesterday is putting on America's back a target. I fear what will happen, because you and I covered the Iraq war. We remember very well the rise and spike of terrorism. And nobody's talking about this. 2 years of genocide in Gaza, bombing left and right in the Middle East. Then you have a US envoy, Barak, in Lebanon saying, Israel will do whatever they want, they will go whatever they want, they will bomb whoever they want. That was weeks ago. And say they don't believe anymore in the borders. They don't believe in any borders that were established post-World War II. They are now in a free zone. They are willing to do whatever. When you have an American administration through their envoys and through their ambassador to Israel saying they believe in a holy war, then we are in an uncharted territories. And I fear for American safeties, and I fear for America's national security. And I think we need to remember what Barack Obama said after the Iraq war, when he said, ISIS is the byproduct, it's the outgrowth of Al-Qaeda, which is the outgrowth of our invasion of Iraq. He added saying, we need to think before we shoot. They're shooting only. The only agenda is kill, kill, kill.
I want to talk about, because Qatar is a very special case, right? I mean, during the first Trump administration, Trump attempted to punish Qatar because they didn't feel that they were being compliant enough with the desires of the then Trump regime, which was essentially being run by Jared Kushner. And when they decided they weren't compliant enough, they attempted to cut them off. Then they brought them back into the fold. The relationship has gotten so, you know, it's on such a 180 that Qatar gave Donald Trump a supposedly free luxury plane, given this free jet that is going to now cost the American people $900 million to upgrade so that he can use it for his personal use or as his pretend Air Force One. We, as you said, have military bases in Qatar. We have American troops that are stationed in Qatar. What is the Qatari government saying now that their supposed ostensive ally has allowed war to be made against them by Israel? What are they saying?
Well, in my contact with the Qataris, they are horrified, abhorred, but also there's a lesson. When the Speaker of the Parliament tweeted that tweet saying, well, you know, it's basically what he was saying about the bombing in Qatar. This is a message to everybody in the Middle East. They heard the message. And the message that even if you give, you know, Donald Trump bribes indirectly and directly, even if you invest in golf courses, because they were negotiating, I think Don Jr. was in Qatar just a week ago or 10 days ago, negotiating for a new golf course, Trump golf course in Qatar. Jared Kushner received from the Qataris billions of dollars, by the way, in his investment. Other people who were part of the Trump administration, Mnuchin, received from the Qataris tons of billions. So that money cannot buy you safety and security, will not guarantee the umbrella of security. Having a military base in your territory will not guarantee your security. Being a good ally to the United States, negotiating not only with Hamas on behalf of the United States, but also with the Taliban. But not only that, when the Armenia, you know, when Trump wanted supposedly to make peace between Azerbaijan and Armenia, the Qataris negotiated for them. The Qataris negotiate also indirectly with Putin. So they've been negotiating and mediating for a long time. That's their brand. Mediation, negotiation, reconciliation. And that brand is being butchered because America allowed Israel to feel so emboldened. That unconditional support is now got to their head where they think they can do whatever they want. And regardless, they own the United States. The United States Congress in their pocket. The presidency is in their pocket. America first was a lie. It's Israel first. Any Israeli is get free healthcare, free education. They don't even have to work, free homes. And who's paying and bankrolling all of that? Your taxpayer money, my taxpayer money, the American taxpayer money. People are homeless in the US. People have huge crisis. They're indebted. But the money for Israel is always there. We need to understand that without that unconditional support, Israel will not be allowed to do that. In the 80s, Joy, you and I talked about Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan, a Republican president, picked the phone call and called the Israelis when they were bombing to oblivion Beirut and said, stop the Holocaust. And within 20 minutes, there was a ceasefire and withdrawal from Beirut. Donald Trump, who pretend like he is, you know, if he was president, October 7 would never happen. If he was president, he's going to solve all of that. Well, you are president now. How much compromata and compromised material, and the one piece about the Epstein files that we never discussed, was he an Israeli asset? What did he provide to the Israeli government? These are all open questions. And with all due respect to all the politicians who are running about thinking this is a ring that was somehow, oh, an American story. This is a global story, an international story, and it's tied directly to Israel and to the Israeli government.
And I think that was going to be my next question, because we were just talking with Congressman Ro Khanna about the Epstein files and Donald Trump seeming sort of mania to keep them secret, to keep them hidden. And then I look at all of these rules that are being put in place very deliberately that are not even about the United States.
Yes.
Right? That protests must be shut down. This Esther, Project Esther, saying that all protests in favor of Palestinians must be shut down at universities. Ousting the president of Harvard, really over what they're claiming was anti-Semitism, but really just protests by students against apartheid and genocide in Gaza.
And folks, that was just part of the news from Wednesday. Welcome to Ebony Spectrum for this week. We have some more news stories for you in this hour, so stay with us. Oh yeah, and before I forget, that was a segment from the Joy Reid Show. It was taped earlier on Wednesday, but on Wednesday there was a lot going on here in the U.S. Not only did Israel bomb Qatar on Tuesday, but some other developments, and you'll hear them in our following stories.
If you're just joining us, it's gone just past 14 GMT. That's 5 p.m. here locally in Doha, the capital of the state of Qatar. Let's remind you, of course, of our breaking news that the Israeli military has carried out airstrikes on Hamas leadership here in Qatar. Loud explosions could be heard in the capital and plumes of smoke can be seen rising. Israeli media reports that Khalil al-Hayya and Zahir Jabarin, part of Hamas's negotiation delegation, were among the targets of the strike. Hamas officials say that all members of that leadership delegation have survived that attack. Now, Qatar's foreign ministry has released a statement on the strike, saying the state of Qatar condemns in the strongest terms the cowardly Israeli attack targeting residential buildings housing several members of the Hamas Political Bureau in the Qatari capital, Doha. This criminal attack constitutes a flagrant violation of all international laws and norms and a serious threat to the security and safety of Qataris and residents of Qatar. The ministry affirms that security agencies, civil defense, and relevant authorities immediately began responding to the incident and taking the necessary measures to contain its consequences and ensure the safety of residents and surrounding areas. The Qatari statement goes on to say, while strongly condemning this attack, the state of Qatar affirms that it will not tolerate this reckless Israeli behavior and its continued tampering with regional security, as well as any action targeting its security and sovereignty. Investigations, it says, are underway at the highest level, and further details will be announced as soon as they become available. Well, the Israeli army has also issued a statement saying the Air Force recently carried out a targeted strike against senior members of the Hamas terrorist organization. The targeted leaders had been instrumental in the organization's activities for many years and are directly responsible for the October 7 massacre and the ongoing war against the state of Israel. Prior to the strike, measures were taken to minimize harm to civilians, including the use of precision-guided munitions and additional intelligence information. Right, well, we have Nida Ibrahim, our correspondent, here on set. Nida, what updates are you getting now on what's happening?
We still do not have any confirmation from the Israeli sources if the assassination attempt was successful or not, if someone had been killed or not. But we are hearing Israeli military officials calling it the fire summit. And why they're calling it that? It's because the Americans have proposed to Hamas a new ceasefire deal that the Hamas delegation, the senior leadership of Hamas, have been meeting to discuss it. And after that, we've heard these loud explosions that were later appeared to be this assassination attempt and attack. Of course, we've been reporting there, Sarah, that the Al Jazeera has been talking to some Hamas people who are saying that no one has been injured during these strikes. But still, it remains to be seen if anyone was harmed or injured. The Israeli media is talking about several names, including, as you say there, Khalil Al-Hayya, the head of the delegation, as well as Khaled Mash'al, who himself was previously the political bureau chief of the party before he's been replaced. And we're talking about names like Hussein Badran, Tahir Nunu, Musa Abu Marzouk, all senior leaderships of Hamas that we are yet to see what has happened to them. We are seeing also Israeli media talking about this decision coming jointly, not just by Israel, but also by the U.S. as well. Of course, we are still waiting for a White House confirmation from our teams there, but we can see that across the board in the Israeli political scene, Israeli military scene, there is a lot of jubilation. There are a lot of congratulations, if you may. We've seen Yair Lapid, the head of the opposition, talking about an exceptional operation in the heart of Doha.
And as you said, that this is Israeli media that's reporting that this was greenlit by the U.S. Speaking to our senior political analyst Marwan, he had said that it would be very surprising if it hadn't, that it hadn't known about it, considering that the biggest U.S. base is here in Qatar.
Indeed, and we've seen how Netanyahu has been moving on with his plans, really not caring about any soul in the world other than President Donald Trump. So it would be surprising if Israel has conducted this assassination attempt without the at least knowledge of the U.S. administration. As we've said again and again, that Netanyahu cares about Donald Trump's opinion. He would not go on such an attack against Qatar, a place, as you say, that holds the largest American base in the region, without that prior potential coordination. Now, Israeli media is also saying that the members of the mini or the small security cabinet have been aware of that attack before it happened, and their members have been asked to remain and keep the operation and the information under a lid until it actually happens.
Okay, thanks, Nida. Stay with us. Obviously, we are going to Charles Stratford, though, because he is at the location of the attack here in Doha. Charles, what are you seeing and what's the latest you're hearing from where you are, where those explosions happened?
Well, we understand the targeted site is in the area behind us, as you can see. I'll just step out of the frame there. The police basically cordoning the area off. We're unable to get into that area. Just to give you a bit of context, though, geographically, this is a large residential area containing a lot of foreign embassies. It's an area that, as is the case right the way across Qatar, is very secure. But there is a great sense of anxiety, certainly amongst the people that you can't see, that are off camera. A lot of people, as you can imagine, on their phones trying to get updates. There has been a message put out by the U.S. Embassy in the last hour or so saying that U.S. citizens should shelter during what it describes as a missile strike. But yeah, this comes as a great shock to Qatar, a country renowned for its security. We've heard the Qatari foreign ministry obviously roundly denounce this attack, saying it's a flagrant violation of international law. But yeah, very difficult, as you can imagine, to get access to what is being reported as being a residential compound or a house in which there were meetings, and participating in those meetings were members of the Hamas negotiating team. But as you say, a statement by Hamas saying, certainly thus far, that no casualties amongst that team.
And, you know, Israel is now calling this strike on the Hamas leadership summit of fire. Hamas has told Al Jazeera that no one has been killed in that attack. Looking at where you are, recognizing the fact that you said there are plenty of embassies. For those that don't know, there's a number of embassies there. And, of course, a huge expat community from around the world. I'm sure those embassies will be very much concerned for their citizens.
That's right. As I say, an alert was put out by the U.S. embassy. This is one of two main areas in Qatar where there are foreign embassies from around the world. But this is, it's easy to say, or it's correct to say, that this is a very high-end residential area. There are many civilians that live here. There are schools close by as well. There's a Lebanese school that isn't far from here. These attacks happened after school hours, it's understood. But yeah, you're right in saying that there are a lot of very panicked and stressed people at the moment, because the echoes of these explosions were heard right the way across the city and even further afield. At least five bangs we heard. So you can imagine for a community, a country that has never seen anything like this before, it comes as a great shock. So there'll be a lot of very nervous people going into this evening here in Qatar.
And of course, Charles, just to it reminds us really as residents here, that feeling of when an attack happened recently by Iran, because of the Israeli and U.S. attacks on its nuclear sites. Talk us through what had happened at the time.
Well, that's right. People still talk about that. In fact, friends that I was talking to, as we heard these explosions, when they happened, that's the first thing they said. That was like, my goodness, that sounds like it did the night when there were those strikes, echoing across this country. So, yeah, as I keep saying, very nervous and of great concern to people. It seems like this was an attempt at a targeted assassination. Israeli sources, Israeli officials speaking in the Israeli media have said that the army, or the Israeli military, took every precaution to make this very much a targeted strike and not to harm those involved. But that will have very little traction Well, as you can imagine, there are many tens of thousands of people that live in the area behind me, an area, as you say, that is full of embassies, that has schools, that recreational centres, mosques, a very peaceful area of the country, as indeed the entire country of Qatar is.
OK, thank you very much. That's Charles Stratford at the scene of that attack by Israel on Qatari soil, on Hamas leadership. Let's go now to Hamda Salhout, who's following the latest developments from Jordan's capital. And she is there because the Israeli government has banned Al Jazeera from reporting inside of Israel, as well as the occupied territories. Hamda, we had the statement from the Israeli army that we had mentioned earlier, confirming that it had taken out this strike on Hamas leadership. Hamas has told Al Jazeera that no one was killed in that attack, but has there been any confirmation from the Israeli side as to whether their attack works for them?
Well, no confirmation on the results of the attacks from Israeli officials, but confirmation from the prime minister himself that Israel did, in fact, carry out this attack. I'm just going to read you this statement here from the prime minister's office that dropped just around a minute ago. Quote, "Today's action against the top terror chiefs of Hamas was a wholly independent Israeli operation. Israel initiated it. Israel conducted it. And Israel takes full responsibility." An astonishing statement from the premier's office there, telling you that Israel has entered into a new chapter of this war, of what they are willing to do in order to achieve their military objective of defeating Hamas. It's worth mentioning that back in December of 2023, just 2 months after the war began, the head of the Shin Bet, the security chief, the internal security agency within Israel, on secret recordings that were leaked, said that Israel was going to assassinate Hamas leaders in several different countries and named Qatar as one of them. That was nearly 2 years ago. And the Israeli security services, the military alike, are confirming that this is, in fact, what they did. But unlike the military and Shin Bet statement, it didn't say who they attacked specifically, and it didn't say where. But Netanyahu's office is confirming that Israel did, in fact, attack Qatar, a country that has been assisting with mediation efforts, assisting with the release of Israeli captives, trying to find any sort of middle ground for a deal, working tirelessly with other mediators to try and get something on the table for the siege on Gaza to end. I also want to mention that American military sources within the region have just told me that they were not aware of this attack, but were only notified after. And they said they cannot speak to whether or not the White House was informed, but American military officials in the region were not aware of the attack until it happened, Sada.
Okay, thank you very much for the update, Hamda. We will be going back to you as we try and get some of those updates from Israel.
That was Al Jazeera English reporting on the bombing in Qatar. Next up, folks, is the CNN report.
Well, I'm joined now by the Prime Minister of Qatar, who is also the Foreign Minister. Sir, thank you for joining us. This has been a difficult 36 hours for you and for the people of Qatar, so I very much appreciate your time. The Israeli attack on Qatar yesterday, local time, 3:40 in the afternoon, has been roundly condemned, variously described as treacherous, shameful, an action that risks further inflaming this region. You described Israel's action as state terrorism. What do you make of the timing of the attack?
Well, look, first of all, Becky, I think that if we look at the pattern of Netanyahu's action since the war started after October 7th, It's been like in a very systematic way trying to undermine any chance of stability, any chance of peace, and any chance of retrieving his own hostages. And these attempts, like we witnessed them in many occasions throughout the negotiations. Now, when we reached to a very critical moment that he claims that according to his intelligence, which is something like very publicly known for everyone, that I was meeting with the leadership of Hamas. Hamas leadership are discussing the negotiation team are discussing the proposal of President Trump during that time.
This was Monday this week.
Actually, everything about the meeting is very well known for the Israelis and for the Americans. And this is nothing. It's not something that we are hiding, or as some marginal people are saying, harboring or whatever. We have to go back to the origins. Now, the attack that happened on Qatar territory, it's happened on our sovereignty. This is number one. Number two, Qatar is a mediator that's been mediating many conflicts. Qatar, when Hamas office was established, was done with coordination, request by the Americans, by the Israelis. They've been using it as a communication channel for them, for Gaza, for all those years. And I'm sorry here, any Israeli politician who today is trying to, to portray himself that he's away from this. This happened under Netanyahu's government, under Bennett government, under Lapid government, under Netanyahu's government again. Any agency says that no, they're not involved. It's not true. Mossad, Shabak, and the Ministry of Defense were involved in that. So there is no justification that this is considered harboring terrorism or whatever, these reckless claims. Now, does that justify for Netanyahu to come and attack a sovereign nation that hosts a negotiation that discussing a paper that's submitted by the United States? It's not only an undermining for our sovereignty and infringing our sovereignty. It's undermining for the entire negotiation. It's undermining for the U.S. effort. This is the country that's hosted the CENTCOM. How come we never thought that even there is like a very minimum level of manners and ethics. This has crossed it. I mean, I honestly have no words to express how raged we are from such an action.
If you could describe it in one word, what would that be?
This is state terror. That's what they call it.
Do you feel betrayed?
We are betrayed, yeah.
By the U.S.?
No, I cannot say it's by the U.S. The U.S. has expressed in many occasions their support to us. The U.S., the president, right after the attack, he spoke with His Highness the Emir, and he was very clear that this is unacceptable, and he's not agreeing with such a thing, and he was never informed about it. And the moment he was informed, he asked his official to inform us. Unfortunately, this information came too late, which is 10 minutes after the attack, as I stated yesterday. But when we were dealing with the Israelis as parties, we were thinking that we are dealing with like regular parties. But Netanyahu, he has no limits.
Let me drill down a little bit on exactly what has happened here then, because I asked about the timing of this attack, because it came at a very crucial time. You personally met with the chief negotiator for Hamas on Monday evening. You pressed Khalil al-Khaya to get Hamas to respond positively to the latest U.S. initiative for a ceasefire and hostage deal. And your team, as I understand it, then worked through the night on the phone with senior Israeli negotiators. And by Tuesday evening, you were expecting to get a response from Hamas. The Qatari negotiation team would have been together with the Hamas negotiation team, and you're expecting to get a response. Let me ask you, do you believe that response would have been an agreement had this attack not happened an hour and a half before that meeting was supposed to take place?
I cannot predict, but what I know that as the meeting that took place with me, between me and the negotiation team from Hamas, I was very clear that there is no positive response on this. I think we are going to run out of chances. And they were promising that this is not their own decision. They have to consult. They have to consult. They have their own structure, and it will take them time. And I told them that you have until Friday. Friday was the time set for me to meet with together myself, the Egyptian chief of intelligence, with the participation of Turkish intelligence, with Steve Witkoff, in order to give him a positive response, to find a way forward for this stalemate that we are in the negotiation. And by the way, at the same day, I was meeting one of the hostages' family that morning, the morning of the attack, carrying a message that the families, they are counting on this mediation. They have no other hope for that. And I think that what Netanyahu has done yesterday, he just killed any hope for those hostages.
Well, in the past hour, he has doubled down on his position. He has said, and I quote the Israeli Prime Minister here, "I say to Qatar and to all nations who harbor terrorists," his words, not mine, "you either expel them or bring them to justice, because if you don't, we will." Do you take that as a threat of further action here?
Well, we don't accept, first of all, such a threat coming from someone like Netanyahu, and he's calling about bring them to justice. He needs to be brought to justice. He's the one who's wanted to the ICC. That's number one. So I think that someone like him trying to lecture the world about the law, he's breaking every law. He broke every international law. He's starving people in Gaza. He's doing all these rogue actions in the entire region. What's next? What's next for him?
You described him as a narcissist. What do you mean by that?
Well, I have no other explanation, because the act itself, I mean, the significance of this act, there is no human mind can just absorb it. You know, we were thinking that we are dealing with civilized people. That's the way we are dealing with others. And the action that he took, it's very, like, I cannot describe it, but it's a barbaric action.
Prime Minister, did you ever believe that hosting Hamas here, at the request of the United States over the years, and mediating talks here at the request of the United States and others, was running a risk that Hamas would be targeted here, which would be an attack on Qatar soil?
Never, because have you ever heard about a neutral country that mediates conflicts being attacked because they are hosting the talks from one of the parties of the conflict? It's never happened. Do you expect such a thing happening from, a very simple example, Taliban office was here in Doha and the U.S. were negotiating with them. Do we expect the U.S. to attack Taliban office and this is justified because of something happened in Afghanistan? This is never, like, this is setting a precedent. Today, we are not seeing that what happened to Qatar is just happening to just, you know, it's not about our sovereignty. It's about the international law. Like, it's been put in question. Now, we are at a detrimental moment. The international community, do they want a rule-based order? Or they want just a chaotic world? What we are seeing in our region right now, that's what this prime minister is leading us to, a chaotic world. And there is nothing stopping him.
We know that five members, at least, of the Hamas delegation were killed in that residence, and a Qatari security official who was detailed to that residence was also killed. And as I understand it, there are others who are injured quite seriously, including other Qataris. The chief Hamas negotiator, Khalil al-Khaya, though, who was the target, or at least one of the targets of this attack, a man again that you met last Monday, is, as we understand it, still alive. Is that the case? And if so, what is his condition, sir?
Well, first of all, the first identified body was killed in that attack was a Qatari officer, 22 years old, who was on duty to protect the facility as any other facilities that we have in Doha. That's number one. Number two, the identified bodies also of the other Palestinian killed, they are staffers who are working with them in Clark's work.
These are not high-level members of the Hamas delegation. Were they not there at the time?
Until now, we are trying to identify if there is any other one missing. There are people who are injured. There are some of them. There are Qataris who are in a very dangerous situation. There is another Qatari officer. He's in a very critical position. We pray for him. But I don't know. I mean, going back that he is targeting, and this is justifying for him to target, like, if he has something with Hamas or Hamas leaders, justifying that targeting them in another sovereign nation, just compare it to any other act. How do you see the world react for other countries, other states who are conducting an operation on other nations' sovereignty to target someone that they wanted?
He has said you either expel them, Hamas, or bring them to justice, because if you don't, we will. And we've talked about whether you see that as a threat. Where are the Hamas members right now, and will you shut down their offices? It's a question that has to be asked. I want to ask you about the future of these talks at this point.
This is actually right now we are reassessing everything about the whole process. We are in a very in a very detailed conversation with the United States government, and we need to understand what will be the way forward, because such a thing is unacceptable. And as I told you, it wasn't for us. It is attack on our sovereignty. It's attack on our nation, but it's an attack on the entire region. Today, the entire GCC region is at risk. GCC is one of the most important allies of the United States in the Middle East. The leaders around the world, everyone is calling us shocked with such an act. If Netanyahu believes that he will never be held accountable, and he continues such a statement by just throwing these statements and threatening countries, I don't know how the world want to deal with it. Our sovereignty, we will protect it, we will defend it to the end.
So the future of these talks at this point, not clear.
I mean, I don't have an answer for this, because really I see a meaningless talk. right now what we are doing, and I think that I've been rethinking even about the entire process for the last few weeks, that Netanyahu was just wasting our time. He wasn't serious about anything.
What about Khalil al-Khaya and the Hamas delegation there? Were they also wasting your time?
Well, actually, look, to be very open, the position that we brought them from to the position that we got on August 18th in Egypt, in Cairo, was far from their initial position. That's number one. Number two, we have to go back to the last ceasefire. The last ceasefire that was brokered by Qatar, US, and Egypt, and guaranteed by those three mediators, supposed to hold the talks on day 16. Israel never showed up for these talks. Yeah. They broke the ceasefire, and When they became interested in the talks, they came here and they started to put proposals, which was very obvious that Hamas will refuse. Mm. So, you know, I will not be in between, you know, the game of tactics of the Israelis or Hamas. I'm at the end of the day, I'm a mediator, I'm a facilitator, I'm trying to facilitate those, so I'm trying to bridge those gaps. And what we see, the progress in the position in August, I think that was significant progress. Unfortunately, Netanyahu declined again and he never responded to that. And they came up with this new proposal, which also was far away from what was proposed in August, what was accepted in August. And they were asking us to pressure Hamas. And we were pressuring them. And we were progressing toward that direction.
I have to ask you again, Khalil al-Khayr, where is he and how is he?
Until now, there is no official declaration where it's here. Do you expect from me to declare today?
Can I ask you, are you satisfied with Donald Trump's response? I mean, defense and diplomatic coordination have anchored these close U.S. Qatari ties. You host thousands of U.S. troops here. Washington has designated Qatar a major non-NATO ally. Are you satisfied with Washington's response?
I think this is what we heard from the president was a very strong message, reiterating his commitment to the partnership of Qatar, expressing that this is unacceptable to be attacked, and we highly appreciate that. And I think the actions should follow. And now, right now, I'm following up with all the U.S. officials in order to see what kind of actions can be taken.
As we speak, do you believe the U.S. is any longer a reliable security guarantor for Qatar and, indeed, for the wider region? And you retain your right to respond, and I wonder what that response might look like and what it might look like from the wider region. For example, do you think the time has come for your Gulf neighbors to suspend the Abraham Accords? I mean, what is this response going to look like?
Well, there are. I think we have to distinguish between two things. There is a response that will be from Qatar, and Qatar, the first resort for a civilized nation, as any other civilized nation, is international law. And that's what we are going to resort to. And there is a response that will happen from the region. And this response is currently under consultation and discussion between the other partners in the region. We are working on Arab Islamic summit that take place in Doha in the next few days. And we will see, we will decide there what kind of actions will be taken.
Is it, though, time to suspend these Abraham Accords and not to look at an ambition, which is normalization with Israel, going forward? Should there even be a two-state solution?
I will not comment on behalf of other countries. Mm. The president of UAE, Sheikh Mohammed, His Highness Sheikh Mohammed, was here this morning, and he expressed his unlimited support for Qatar, and he put everything in our disposal. And we are not going to ask anyone to take a decision on behalf of them. They are a sovereign nation, and they decide what to do and what not. There is a collective response that should happen from the region, and this collective response, we are hoping for something meaningful that deter Israel from continuing this bullying.
Last question to you. There is a growing narrative in the region that Benjamin Netanyahu is the biggest threat to this region. Do you share that?
Right now, name for me, it's not in the region, name for me any other country in the world that bomb 7 different nations at the same time, bomb ships in the middle of the Mediterranean,
You're talking about the Gaza flotilla, of course. Israel hasn't taken responsibility.
Without being held accountable. What I mentioned yesterday, what Netanyahu is doing, he is leading his country as a rogue state, and this cannot be acceptable for us in the region. If we are talking about a Middle East, that peaceful Middle East, he's claiming that always that he's the one who is threatened. He's the one who is threatening every other nation. None of our nations has represented a threat for him, nor for his people. So why he claims that he's the man of peace while he's doing the opposite? Does the world believe that? I think we are in a very detrimental moment in this region. This gentleman is claiming that he has a message from God, from somewhere, that he will create a greater Israel, and there is a new Middle East that he is shaping. And this GCC became part of his manipulation today. This is a very dangerous precedent. I don't think it's acceptable for anyone. It's not acceptable for us, nor acceptable for any of other GCC nations, and it shouldn't be acceptable for the world.
With that, I'm going to leave it there. We thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you, Becky.
Before we go into our next news story, we have one more thing about the response to what happened in Kedar.
Thank you, Madam President. I take the floor in explanation of vote on the resolution endorsement of the New York Declaration on the peaceful settlement of the question of Palestine and implementation of the two-state solution. We express our gratitude to you for convening this meeting and thank the co-chairs, France and Saudi Arabia, for a successful high-level international conference for peaceful settlement of the question of Palestine and the implementation of the two-state solution. This is a very important and long overdue matter. We also thank the co-chairs of the various working groups for their efforts in the build-up to and during the high-level conference in July. As we meet here today, the killings in Gaza are unabating. The genocide continues without any hope that it will soon end. The state of Israel continues to act with impunity and without fear of being held accountable. In recent days, it has extended its illegal actions by now also attacking Qatar in a blatant violation of international law, breaching the principles of sovereignty and territorial integrity, while also compromising the safeguarding of civilians as outlined in the United Nations Charter and international humanitarian law. This flagrant violation of the sovereignty and territorial integrity of the state of Qatar comes against the background of the government of Qatar playing a prominent role as facilitator to achieve a ceasefire in Gaza and the release of all hostages held by Hamas. Madam President, we note with deep concern the motion adopted by the Israeli Knesset calling for applying Israeli sovereignty over the occupied West Bank and the Jordan Valley, signaling the intention of Israel to annex this territory. This could effectively bury the two-state solution and continue with blatant violation of international law, including UN resolutions and ICJ rulings, which have given hope to the Palestinian people. This motion, together with statements such as those made yesterday by Prime Minister Netanyahu, that, and I quote, "There will be no Palestinian state. This land is ours," close quote, undermines the prospect of a Palestinian state. Despite the horror that is happening in Gaza or the occupied Palestinian territories in general, we are pleased that UN member states, in their numbers, have come out in support of the call to end the atrocities in Palestine and implement the almost 80-year-old promise of Palestinian statehood. We are hopeful that the end of the occupation is within reach and the creation of a contiguous Palestine state existing peacefully and side by side with the State of Israel along the 1967 borders with East Jerusalem as its capital will soon become a reality. This resolution that we have adopted today, reaffirming the two-state solution, should not distract us from the urgent efforts that are needed to ensure an immediate ceasefire and an end to Israel's genocidal war against the Palestinian people. We should be emboldened to act so that negotiation for a just peace can commence. The stability of the Middle East region and international peace and security in general depends on a just and peaceful resolution to the question of Palestine and holding those who violate international law accountable to ensure that all states are safe from wanton and brazen aggression and that international law remains credible. At the request of the General Assembly, the ICJ has issued an advisory opinion finding Israel's continued presence in the occupied Palestinian territory, including East Jerusalem, unlawful and that it must end rapidly as possible. The court determined Israel's policies and practices, including its settlement expansion, land confiscation, and discriminatory legislation, violate fundamental international law principles such as the right to self-determination and the prohibition of acquiring territory by force. The opinion also sets obligations for all states to not recognize the illegal situation and not provide aid to maintain it and requires the UN General Assembly and Security Council to consider actions to bring the unlawful presence to an end. A year ago, this assembly adopted Resolution A/10/24, calling on all member states to take necessary measures to implement this ICJ advisory opinion. This creates legal obligations on us, all of us, which we must adhere to. Madam President, South Africa voted in favor of the resolution today and welcomed the outcome on 5 September 2025 with a clear understanding that the outcome document, as described in this paragraph, in paragraph 42 of the declaration, was prepared under the authority of the co-chairs and is seen as their own view on the outcome of discussions, as well as proposals from the working groups, and does not preclude a more inclusive approach to negotiations towards finalizing the two-state solution and a true realization of the right to self-determination of the people of Palestine. The outcome serves as an important reference for what is required for a viable two-state solution, while not constituting a determination or prejudgment of the negotiations required to achieve this. Once again, we thank the co-chairs for this outcome document and be assured of South Africa's continued support in this process. I thank you.
I thank the representative of South Africa.
The senator from Georgia.
Mr. President, today is a solemn day in the memory of our nation. May we pause at the beginning of my remarks to remember those who passed into the light on September 11th. Amen. Mr. President, I rise tonight in deep sadness for a nation that is increasingly beset by political violence. Yesterday, political activist Charlie Kirk was killed while speaking to students on a college campus, a place that is set up for the exchange of ideas. He was just 31 years old, a husband, a father of young children. I pray for his wife, Erica, and for his children who must now make their way without him. And his death comes on the heels of the devastating assassination of Speaker Emerita Melissa Hortman and her husband, Mark Hortman of Minnesota, victims of premeditated political violence. This should shock the conscience of every American, and it should cause all of us to rise up and say enough. Let me be clear. I disagreed with Charlie Kirk on just about everything. But I rise tonight not in spite of those differences, but in a real sense because of those differences. I rise to say that he had a right to speak, to think, to change his mind or not, to engage with others, to participate in the free exchange of ideas, to argue it out. That is what it means to live in a democracy. That is who we are. We Americans engage in loud, heated, and sometimes rambunctious debates, not as a precursor to violence, but to avoid violence. And we must learn to disagree without becoming violently disagreeable. Let me be clear. There is nothing more anti-democratic than political violence. Democracy is about creating space for competing voices and countervailing visions about who we are as one people. And that debate in the public square is what has made us better over time. And so while pushing back, sometimes hard, against those with whom we vigorously disagree, we must with the same voice and vigor defend their right to be. Their right to be heard, to be free. Our American family is held together by these democratic ideals. But I am afraid that what we are seeing increasingly around us is the tearing of those threads that bind us together. E pluribus unum, out of many, one. The ability to see past our political differences and see in the humanity of the other a glimpse of our own. And so we must condemn what happened to Charlie Kirk, whether we are on the right or on the left, because condemning that heinous crime is not about the difference between right and left. It is the difference between right and wrong, and what happened on yesterday was wrong. Whatever the motivation, this we know it was wrong. And we have to say that clearly and without hesitation. I serve as pastor of the Ebenezer Baptist Church, spiritual home of Martin Luther King Jr. And we all know that Dr. King was a victim of gun violence. What fewer people remember or know is that in 1974, his precious mother, Alberta Williams King, the wife of the pastor of the church, Martin Luther King Sr., was shot and killed in our church one Sunday morning while playing the Lord's Prayer on the organ. Martin Luther King Sr. was asked what he thought about all of this. And I'm struck and inspired by his words, having lost his precious wife on a Sunday morning, having witnessed his son struck down. Martin Luther King Sr. said, "I will never let any man pull me down so low as to hate him." He said, "Hate is too heavy a burden to bear." He's right. And that's why in this moment we must condemn political violence, but we must also condemn hate. and hate speech. You cannot condemn one without condemning the other. For hate is itself a kind of violence that kills the spirit and corrupts the soul of a person and of a nation. And that vicious cycle of violence and hate, of hate and violence, can only lead to the demise of our country and the destruction of our humanity. And so in this defining moment, may we resist the seductive sirens of those who are trying to convince us that we are at war with one another. Amidst our fierce debates, I submit that at the end of the day, we are all we've got. We the people. All we really have is one another, and a democracy is the imperfect institutionalization of that moral insight. All we have is one another. You either have a democracy or you have political violence. You cannot have a democracy awash in political violence. And so every single day, let us choose democracy. Choose what the Apostle Paul called the more excellent way, the way of love. Love come alive in the complicated story of a diverse people who refuse to give up on one another. It takes strength to love. It takes courage to love. It takes patience and persistence to love. God, grant us strength and courage. God, grant us patience and persistence for the facing of this hour and for the living of these days. I yield the floor.
Thank you for listening.
Hello, I'm Kevin Jameson, volunteer and president of the Dementia Society of America. Please request our free guide filled with facts about dementia. Go to 1-800-DEMENTIA.org or call 1-800-DEMENTIA. Thank you.
This is Kevin Amos, and you're listening to the Jazz Corner here on LMB Network, WRCT Pittsburgh, and WRCT.org.